next, The Gary Knowles Show.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knowles. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about so many issues that are important to our well-being. We always begin with the latest on healing, always citing the peer-reviewed literature. Today, I'll talk about frankincense. It's going to help save your life. The negative effects of too much protein. And finally, mainstream science and medicine is accepting it. The wonderful healing power of Brussels sprouts. And also, a hair analysis found elevated stress hormone concentrations in obese children as young as 8. What does that mean? Plus a lot more on health and healing. From our environmental segment today, we're going to look at three issues. The first is, why aren't more Americans aware that global warming is real? Well, because what is called dark money funding. What's that mean? It means, according to the journal Climate Change, that some very well-connected people to major industries are putting an enormous amount of money, tens of millions of dollars, out to make sure that you don't believe global warming is either real or important. Well, then that takes us to the second issue today, and that is, did you hear? Over the weekend, it snowed in Vietnam. Yeah, that's never happened. Oh, and animals all over the Middle East froze to death because they had never had temperatures drop that quick. Didn't that happen 3 weeks ago in Montana? Yes, in Wyoming, yeah, where animals are used to cold winters, but thousands on one farm alone, thousands of cows, hundreds of horses died because their bodies couldn't handle it. So we're seeing where historically it's very tropical all the time, such as Thailand. It's now into a freeze. That's right. 100,000 people plus don't have any warm clothing, so now they've just cited that it's a national emergency. So global warming's real, and it's going to get worse. In places that you never thought would see snow freezing, they're seeing it today and at least for the next week. So I'll go into that. Also, Japan is now seeing a, quote, surge in cancers among young because of Fukushima. We predicted this. I didn't know it happened this fast, but it is. Also, commentary, a history of fake alarms. Why are we giving up so many of our rights because of a fear that of terrorism? Joe Loria from Consortium News. Then we'll also take a look at an issue. I'm going to do two clips today, time permitting. One, that on the one hand where we are struggling for the average person just to be able to buy food, to pay for a water bill, to just exist, and are looking for any kind of help and willing to work for it. But there's just many cases no work there. The government spent, are you ready for this? $8 trillion and can't account for a penny of it. So we'll give you a 4-minute clip on that. Now, mind you, when we talk about our tax revenues and how we have to increase this tax, and I gave examples of over 75 different taxes, and I gave it for a simple reason, because I was tired of hearing those people who choose never to do any scholarship, never to do any authentic fact-checking, and saying, oh, you know, the middle class poor, they don't pay any taxes. Yes, they do. And I listed 75 different taxes that they do pay. But who wants to know how much money our government is spending that does not benefit anyone at all, except those who have the power to manipulate it? And it's time, especially, I don't mind the right. We wouldn't expect them to ever do the right thing on anything, and they don't. They never disappoint us. But for decades, the left has been wrong. Wrong. They refuse to look at the corruption in bureaucracies. They refuse to honor the citizens. They refused to demand in protests with unions and with public workers our constitutional rights back, including habeas corpus. I don't see the demonstrations. Maybe you do. I don't see people protesting when the government spends money that we pay it when we're struggling, and they just splurge it. One other way, they splurged $1 billion last year on sweatshops. Yeah, the U.S. government went on a sweatshop buying spree. This was just reported. I'll share this with you. $1 billion to buy uniforms that were made under sweatshop conditions in free trade zones. What could we have done? Well, I did the math. That same $1 billion that we shouldn't have been spending at all, let alone on sweatshop labor, we could have taken every single one of the 18 million hungry children in the United States and established wholesome food assistance programs in every county in the United States, and to have fed all of those children for a year. That would have been the right way to spend the money. So isn't it time that we all set ideologies aside and just ask for the truth? Where is our money going? And if you don't have a problem having people spend your money with the idea that somehow it's a tax dollar, so it's going to be spent correctly, it's never spent correctly when it comes to bureaucracies. And if you're going to take that mindset, then I can assure you, you're not going to be offended by the $1.6 trillion the military-industrial complex spends. And then I've gone through all the budgets. I just did it in the last 3 days. I just decide how much money is each one of these agencies spending? What does it go to? Do we get better? Do we cleaner water, rebuild our infrastructures? Do we de-ghettoize cities? Do we put work programs in place? Do we educate people, help people? Do we prevent disease? None of that. So the left, it's time you address these, not just those who have historically, the authentic left. Yeah, they're doing a good job, always have. I'm talking about those who pretend that they care. Also, coming up tomorrow, a full hour with Gerald Celante. Once a year, generally the last of the year, we look at everything for the upcoming year. Now, this guy's got an accuracy prediction rate of approximately 95%. So we're going to ask some hard questions of him. But today I'm going to play something that will be, it'll show you how the entire media missed the issue of gold and what's happening to the world currencies. And this is Max Keiser. And in a really searing discussion in Westminster. George Galloway hosted it. So I'm going to play a part of it. And then tomorrow I'm going to play about 15 minutes of The Wolf of Wall Street, showing you the entire culture of Wall Street, the entire culture of greed that our society at that level, in those spheres of making money, hedge funds, equity partnerships. We're going to go into depth on this, but the new movie opened yesterday, The Wolf of Wall Street, with Leonardo DiCaprio. But this is the man who lived the life. And there's no one who can tell his story the way he can. We'll play about 15 minutes of that tomorrow. So tomorrow's show you do not want to miss, because it's going to give you an opening to what's going to be happening. Let's begin. We have a lot to share. Chemotherapy is one of the most non-scientifically supported areas of medicine. And yet, hundreds of billions of dollars have gone into testing and researching chemotherapy. You wouldn't know that anything else in the world helped except chemotherapy or radiation if you went into a Sloan Kettering. But in point of fact, the scientific literature is filled with different natural treatments. This is from Green Med Info, Ken McCowan. Here's what he says. Frankincense, according to researchers at the University of Leicester, have for the first time demonstrated the potential of treating ovarian cancer using frankincense. By the way, he's speaking about the same frankincense that's the Christmas wise men gift, frankincense. The origins of frankincense can be traced to the Arabian Peninsula, and according to Herodotus, 5th century BC, Arabia is the only country which produces frankincense, myrrh, cassia, and cinnamon. The trees bearing the frankincense are guarded. That's according to fable. Now, of course, cinnamon and these others can grow elsewhere. Frankincense and myrrh are two of the most famous Christmas presents in history, in a fragrant plant resin extracted from the Boswellia sacra tree found across Africa and Arabia. Using the compound AKBA derived from the resin of the tree, the researchers have successfully shown its potential effectiveness in targeting ovarian cancer. More specifically, they've been able to demonstrate the ability of this sap, this resin, this acetyl-11-keto-beta-boswellic acid, or AKBA, to combat cancer cells in late-stage ovarian cancer. And this was done through a Dr. Kumla of the University Department of Cancer Studies Molecular Medicine. A year of studying the compound with ovarian cancer lines, quote, we have been able to show that it is effective at killing the cancer cells. There are no known side effects. This finding has enormous potential to be taken to a clinical trial in the future and develop into additional treatment for ovarian cancer. Well, that's good news, because you get to a late stage or stage four ovarian cancer, nothing orthodox medicine does can work, nothing. So killing ovarian cancer cells with frankincense compound, that's important, and I'm sure many holistic doctors will start using that and getting the effective medical-grade resin. There was a time when I was weightlifter, what's called powerlifting. I was 17 and then 18 years old, 2 years that I put a lot of energy into it. There were a bunch of us that lifted. I was the vegetarian, though I did consume huge amounts of non-fat dry milk, because the weight magazine showed Charles Atlas, some of the others consumed lots of this, you know, milk protein. Some of the other guys would eat the raw eggs, and we were all big. I was the shrimp guy, and I was 238 pounds of all muscle. I mean, all muscle. Some photographs of that were still up on my website. But I had bloatedness in the face, and I had puffiness under my eyes all the time, and didn't think anything of it. And it was only when this little guy came to visit, and we were working out of a garage that had been converted into a power gym, and he was on his way to another town, and he heard that since we had no gym, we didn't have a YMCA in my town. But this is where, you know, the guys worked out. And he couldn't weigh 140 pounds, and yet we saw him do things that day that we had never seen, didn't know was possible. 2,000 sit-ups without stopping, and he could have gone on. He did things that we had never seen, including none of us could lift him. That freaked us out. Boy, we weren't ready for that. And he just smiled about it. He never explained it. He just said he understood energy. It was only after I left my hometown and came to New York that I gave up dairy, and immediately the puffiness under the eyes went away, and I felt lighter and began to lose weight. I just didn't need all that weight. Well, I started to think later, how much protein was I consuming? Because athletes are really obsessed about protein. And then I did an analysis, found out I was consuming probably 3 times more protein than what my body required at that time. Today, I see people, just normal citizens, consuming 3 times more protein in a day than their body actually requires. Now we know that protein is not stored in the body. So if you have a big protein meal, and most people do, you're consuming probably 2 days worth of protein in one meal. Well, the body can't store it for the next day, so it really plays havoc with your kidneys and your liver, ammonium and urea, and it dehydrates. In any case, when switching over to a vegan plant-based protein, that's the healthiest protein to eat, because then you're not getting very high concentrations. It's diluted with B-complex and fibers and polyphenols. It has lots of antioxidants and healing enzymes. It's all good, like a split pea soup or a bowl of brown rice or a bowl of red quinoa. This is the latest from the Institute of Medicine of the National Academies. That's our official government medical library. Quote from Natural News, protein is one of the most commonly supplemented macronutrients because it's relatively cheap, has many health benefits, and is commonly propagated as a meal replacement. But what most people don't realize, though, is that too much protein can actually have adverse health effects. These negative consequences range from reduced kidney efficiency to weight gain. The Institute of Medicine of the National Academies recommends the average person consume 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight per day. And that means that a 150-pound male should consume 54 grams protein a day, which is fully achieved with the average diet. Okay, the consumption of protein over these recommendations can lead to renal damage, gout, attacks, and weight gain. The continued consumption of protein above these recommendations can damage the kidneys via hyperinfiltration, decreasing their efficiency. This is especially true for people who already have renal complications. High-protein diets, which, by the way, is the average American consumes, a high-protein diet. If you're eating steak, too much protein. Hamburger, too much protein. And chicken, too much protein. Even people eating fish every day, it's too much protein. And we've also seen attacks in severity and frequency of gout. Now, what's gout? Gout's nothing more than high levels of uric acid in the bloodstream crystallizing and accumulating around the joints, and that's causing the pain. And the formation of uric acid is accompanied by a breakdown of what are called purines, which occurs naturally in meats. So a high-protein diet and overindulging in meats can cause you to have severe cases of gout. And lastly, because protein breaks down to 4 calories per gram, excessive consumption of protein can lead to weight gain. Now also, most meat is only about 20 to 30% protein. The rest of it is fat. Excuse me. And fat gives you 8 calories per gram oxidized. So you're having an average steak, you're having a lot of calories. And so you're taxing your metabolism, you're taxing your pancreas, your intestine, because there's no fiber. When you have a hamburger, a grilled cheese sandwich, a milkshake, when you're having a piece of cheese, your whole intestines start to slow down. Why? Because there's a signal that is sent over to the gallbladder to create bile that then is brought back through the bile duct so it can break down the fat. Every time you have the kind of saturated fats from animal proteins, it's like going from 60 miles an hour to 5 miles an hour on the highway. That causes constipation. That causes pressure diseases. That causes local inflammation that can lead to diverticulitis. So think about that. The next time you have protein, make sure that you're not having high quantity. You shouldn't have more than ideally 25 grams of protein two or three times a day, depending upon your needs. One thing we only eat about once a year in the United States for the average person is Brussels sprouts. First, because any one of you who's ever grown Brussels sprouts know that it takes a long time to grow. It's one of the longest, takes months and months to grow Brussels sprouts. But Brussels sprouts, which are used all over Europe and have been for a long time, they kind of resemble a diminutive cabbage. And most people steam them or boil them, and then they add them to some meat-based dish and for traditional holidays. But the Brussels sprout is a rich cruciferous vegetable, such as broccoli and kale. Has a great taste to it, especially if you season it correctly. And I like to use cumin on it, and cumin with Himalayan pink sea salt and some cayenne pepper. Delicious to have it that way. Or to put it into a stew. Now, why should you want Brussels sprouts? Well, because all cruciferous vegetables help prevent cancer. They help also to prevent DNA damage. That's why having more cruciferous vegetables every day helps you live a longer life, a healthier life. They're very rich in different vitamins. They have over 20 essential vitamins in a single half cup. And you get a lot of vitamin C. In fact, in a half cup of, which is a small amount, a half cup of Brussels sprouts, you get about as much as you do in an orange. And you get some good vitamin A in there as well. You also get, according to the Linus Pauling Institute, a rich amount of glucosinolates. Now, glucosinolates are a group of phytochemicals that are part of what are called isothiocyanates. And the glucosinolates are proven to stimulate programmed cell death of cancer cells. That means that it helps kill cancer cells in the body, but not normal cells. In fact, there was an article published in the British Journal of Nutrition showing that Brussels sprouts and other cruciferous vegetables are very important as cancer fighters. So, and they're high in fiber. You're getting a good quality fiber from Brussels sprouts. Also, we all know that stress is bad when it's the stress that distresses us. Now they're finding that young kids that are overweight are stressed. At Erasmus Sophia Children's Hospital in Rotterdam in the Netherlands, obese children were shown to produce very high stress hormones, and this was published in the Endocrine Society's Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Now, why is this important? Because every person's body produces the hormone cortisol when you're experiencing distress. So when a person faces frequent stress, cortisol and other stress hormones build up in the blood, and over time, those are really bad. They can cause heart disease. They can damage the inner epithelial tissue and cause hardening of the arteries. They can shrink over a period of time the artery so that less blood is able to go through, creating greater pressure like high blood pressure. So it's stress kills and really affects the brain because it causes oxidative stress in the brain, which leads to amyloid plaques. And in this case, they measured, did hair samples and found out that they had all these biomarkers for stress and had very elevated cortisol. Quote, "We were surprised to find obese children as young as 8 already had elevated cortisol levels." This was MD, PhD, Dr. Erica Acker. And, quote, "By analyzing children's scalp hair, we were able to confirm higher cortisol levels persistent over time." The takeaway message of this is that we are feeding our children the wrong foods that is killing them, putting them into position for massive diseases later in life. But the body is now producing stress hormones chronically every day. So these kids are not going to live a long life. they're going to be susceptible to heart attacks in their teens and 20s. That is what it's saying. I'm Gary Knoll. Now to our environmental segment of our program. This is concerning me. This is, I've been telling you about this, and I've been telling you for some time, so I'm going to put this in a new perspective. No human being on Earth, no human being alive today can predict what our weather is going to be like 5 years from now. There is no mathematical model that can tell us how quickly the snow's the ice pack is going to melt in Greenland and or Antarctica, the two largest ice packs in the world, or the glaciers melting. All we know that it's going beyond anything that anyone had anticipated or expected. That also means that the Arctic is warming up. That also means methane gas is starting to be released. That means that methane gas is far more potent as a global warming agent than carbon dioxide, and there's a lot more of it. And it's being released all across the Arctic and also all across the Canadian and Russian tundras. That means that as you have warmer north, you're now having the paradox of a colder south. Hence this, quote, Thailand declared cold disaster zone, snow in Vietnam. In Turkey, quote, this is just today, animals literally freeze where they stand, freeze to death where they stand. And then it shows a map of all this area that has always been tropical, always where people, 12 months a year, they're out there and it's hot. Quote, this is from just one of the news services. Quote, hundreds of thousands of residents in Thailand are suffering from current cold snap, with many areas having been declared disaster zones. Some 100,000 people are suffering from cold and in need of winter clothing. From another site, Meteorological Institute forecast temperatures in the north to fall another 7 degrees Celsius later this week. 7 degrees Celsius? From where they're at now? They've never seen that in their history. Quote, snow in Vietnam. The Asian correspondent writes that, quote, we were treated to a rare sight today, snow, the white stuff. It's rare in this part of the world. Yeah, how about never? Not only Southeast Asia is being hit hard by unusually cold winter, but also vast areas of Central Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa. Some of these regions are typically famous for agreeably warm temperatures. Not now. Why? Warm Arctic causing cold winters in the tropics. Now, that may not make any sense, but that's because people don't understand the science of it. Here's what it means. Extreme cold is going to be hitting all of Asia in the next 7 days. Now, this should lead us to ask if less sea ice in the Arctic is causing extreme cold all the way down to the tropics, 7,000 kilometers away. And over recent years, scientists defending global warming hypothesis have suggested a warm Arctic is causing the rest of the northern hemisphere to see more severe winters. And that's what's happening. It's all part of the same global phenomena. So now, even tropical South America is staying cool, and they haven't seen that at this time of year. Not in these regions. So yeah, it's all part of global warming. This also from our environmental report. This comes from Energy News, quote, from the South China Morning Post, surges in cancers among young Fukushima. And then it goes on to talk about what they're seeing as a voice of alarm from a professor of epidemiology, the Chernobyl disaster of 1986. It was not until 5 years after Chernobyl that thyroid cancers surged. Now they're seeing it now, 2 years after, here. Well, yeah, because there's a lot more radiation in it at Chernobyl that already encased it. Nothing has been done. It's flowing 24/7, full force in the water, soil, air. So you're going to see an epidemic of thyroid cancer in children all over Japan. It'll start in the immediate area of, let's say, 100 miles. But within 2 years from now, Japan will have cancer and immune defections everywhere on the island. Why are we not more aware of what's going on with our climate? Why is this not a worldwide initiative? Why haven't we gotten all the countries of the world together who have the science, the engineering, and the resources to encase Fukushima, to help them? But we haven't. In part, it's because there's a group of people who are paying enormous amounts of money to buy scientists to then confuse the public. This is from Common Dreams. Quote, millions in dark money funding climate change denial. Report, it's not just a couple of rogue individuals doing this. This is a large-scale political effort. The expansive misinformation campaign behind climate change denial is increasingly being funded in the dark, reveals a new report published today in Climate Change. Quote, according to the study entitled Institutionalizing Delay, Foundation Funding and the Creation of U.S. Climate Change Counter-Movement Organizations, while the largest and most consistent funders of climate change denial are a number of well-known conservative foundations and industry groups, the majority of donations come from dark money or concealing funding. Delving into what he calls the climate change counter-movement, the author from Drexel University, environmental sociologist Robert Buell, uncovers the various players behind the powerful global warming misinformation campaign. Quote, like a play on Broadway, the counter-movement has stars in the spotlight, often prominent contrarian scientists or conservative politicians, but behind the stars is an organizational structure of directors, scriptwriters, and producers in the form of conservative foundations. If you want to understand what's driving this movement, you have to look at what's going on behind the scenes. And so he went behind the scenes and found that what we see in front of television, that people saying, well, we can't be absolutely certain, we need more research. No, these are all people paid, and it's all scripted, and it's there. Something that you're not supposed to know about is how much of your tax money is wasted. Millions? No. Billions? Not even close. Hundreds of billions. Enough money is wasted to completely rebuild all of America. Let me state that again clearly, because this is not hyperbole. What the government has wasted, misspent, could rebuild every single ghetto, every single city, have zero unemployment, rebuild our infrastructures, our roads, our dams, our bridges, our schools, our hospitals, and even give us universal health care all at the same time. But instead, here's what you got when you gave your taxes and you didn't question the so-called good bureaucrats.
Pentagon has secured a $630 billion budget for next year, even though it's failed to even account for the money it's received since 1996. A whopping $6.5 trillion of taxpayer cash have gone to defense programs, none of which has been audited. And this black budget has sparked concerns over political fraud, as Gainer Chikan now reports.
The Pentagon is almost certainly the biggest source of waste in the U.S. government. A Reuters investigation says since 1996, the Pentagon has spent $8.5 trillion in taxpayer money that has never been accounted for. And nobody can say for sure how many billions of that amount were wasted on goods and services that were never delivered, on overpayments to contractors and many other things. What does Congress do about it? Nothing.
And national security expert Steve Miles is here with me to help us crunch these numbers. $8.5 trillion unaccounted for?
It's a lot of money. This is the kind of thing that you would think would bring Capitol Hill to a screeching halt. There'd be hearings kind of almost daily. You'd have various committees looking into it. None of that. It just leads to massive waste, and there can be all sorts of fraud that you don't know about. Just one example, when the Inspector General looked at Iraq, which was, you know, a lot of money, but in the grand scheme, just a portion of the money the U.S. spends. What they found was about $50 billion of the money the U.S. spent there was wasted. And about $6 billion was completely lost. They had no idea where it went. It was completely unaccounted for. But put that in perspective, that's about this amount of money that other countries would spend on their defense in a year total. And that's just the loose pocket change that we lost in the couch.
One thing I found very interesting in this report is that the Pentagon apparently uses a standard operating procedure to enter false numbers or so-called plugs to cover lost or missing information in their accounting in order to submit a balanced budget to the Treasury. So they can write in everything.
I mean, that's probably the most shocking part of this, is that they get to the end of the day and they say, oh, there's money missing. What do we do? Well, we'll just put a number in there that says it's there and we'll sort it out later. I mean, again, this is the type of operating practice that if you did it in your own business, if you tried to do it with your own taxes for the government, they'd haul you off to jail.
What contributes to the massive waste is the fact that for two decades, the Pentagon has dodged an audit, which means nobody checked if the numbers in their accounting made any sense. Congress has just passed a budget that allocates around $630 billion to the Pentagon, roughly the same amount as last year. How much of that will be wasted? Taxpayers will never know. In Washington, I'm Ganesh Chagan, RT.
Washington needs to wake up and start cracking down on unaccountable overspending at the Pentagon. That's the view of retired U.S. Army Colonel Douglas McGregor.
I have actually been in this position when I was the director of joint operations at SHAPE headquarters. For reasons that I didn't understand, my pay was suddenly reduced, and it took a year to ultimately straighten it out. And then subsequently, I was paid money that I had actually earned, but for reasons that no one could explain, had not been paid to me. My point is that you're dealing with millions of people and a lot of instability, a lot of movement, and it's a difficult system to work effectively. This is an enormous problem, and this is something that absolutely must be addressed and addressed in a forthright manner. At the moment, no one on Capitol Hill seems terribly concerned.
And U.S. intelligence expert Gordon Duff says lawmakers have become increasingly corrupted by their ties to the military industry.
We have so many defense entities that have gained so much power in Washington over the past 10 years. Certainly, I consider it the phony war on terror has been an opportunity for the defense industry to buy Congress. The Pentagon works much like the Federal Reserve. We have overt and covert policies. We have so many black budget projects, including nuclear weapons development projects, that went dark as early as 1991. We have heard of none of the advances we know that were achieved during the Strategic Defense Initiative in the 80s and 90s. Those have all gone dark. But they're continuing to eat funds, and we're watching much of the military budget used for sustaining a top-heavy military, an Air Force where every third person is a general.
Who knew that every third person in the Air Force is a general? Who knew that there was $8 trillion, with a T, trillion dollars, missing? We knew that over $50 billion was given as bribes or stolen outright in just Iraq alone. No crimes, no one held accountable. That's how it works. And then they can just lie and deceive and manipulate. I'm concerned that we have bureaucracies that are now fully under the control of special interest groups. And this is a part of this whole grab. And you and I are paying for this. It's time that we became fully aware that we should have governments that work on our behalf, agencies at work for the protection of the environment, and we the citizens, and not just as profit streams for those who are powerful enough to manipulate the system. Now we're going to go to just a part of a discussion with Max Keiser and George Galloway, who's a member of Parliament, at an evening discussion that Max Keiser had. And the question that he is raising is the collapse of the world currency market. He's extremely accurate in his predictions, but how a former prime minister played into this and how he did it. This was missed by the entire world media. In fact, I saw no one writing about this anywhere. So this is the first time we've gotten the true story of why gold is being suppressed, why it's going to go through the roof. I'm going to go more in detail about this tomorrow with my guest, our end-of-the-year discussion with Gerald Salante for what we can expect in the new year. But this is remarkably interesting stuff stated by a man who does not pull his punches. I want to go now for the next 10 minutes. This is only, the actual segment is about 24 minutes. We can't listen to all of it, but at least this will give you some of the insights of how world leaders, especially Gordon Brown in England, was behind a massive manipulation that adversely affected the entire British economy, and the Federal Reserve was behind that.
Don't serve the public anymore. It's just something on the way to serve their banking masters. And we're seeing it here in the UK, Tony Blair being a prime example of that. We see it in the US as well with Bill Clinton and others. But I wanted to divide my talk this evening into basically two parts. And I thought I would try to piece together for you something interesting, taking a look at some of the political themes that are dominant here in Parliament, here in the UK. We know that there's a lot of brinkmanship going on right now between the UK and Germany. So we have Cameron is trying to work out a deal on the EU, and he's getting some pushback from Germany. And this has been going on for some time. There's a couple of high-level meetings coming up in the near future. So the question is, who is going to win this battle between Germany and the UK? Although it's not really presented as such, it's more of the EU versus the UK, whether the UK wants to be in the EU and what are the benefits and what are the costs, et cetera. But it's really between Germany and the UK. It's clear that in Frankfurt there's a possibility now of them achieving some banking supremacy in Europe. And Cameron says he won't join this banking union. He wants to protect the city of London and keep its position as the top bank center in the world. Let's see. They just got downgraded. The city of London is now number two. Number one is New York City. Hong Kong is hot on their heels, and I think Frankfurt, of course, wants a big piece of that business. David Cameron, in his recent speech at the Lord Mayor's banquet, he's defending the city. He's promoting the city. Now, what David Cameron can't seem to see is how the rest of the world sees the city of London. What David Cameron fails to see is that the City of London is the laxest regulatory environment in the world. The AIG scandal with the heart of the 2008 collapse, the Lehman Brothers collapse, the Bernie Madoff scandal, all had huge components, primary components, right here in the City of London. This is what David Cameron wants to protect. The LIBOR scandal, $300 trillion scandal, news coming about this on a daily basis, how traders in London gaming the system for ill-gotten gains, disrupting the system, causing huge financial dislocation. This is all through London. HSBC implicated in huge multi-hundred billion pound money laundering scandals involving Mexican drug cartels. This is what David Cameron wants to defend. Barclays Bank, involved in hundreds of billions of dollars worth of money laundering, market manipulation, drug cartel money, the energy market rigging, the price protection insurance mis-selling. The list goes on and on. Paul Moore, top regulator, former top regulator of HBOS in London. I had him on my show. He agreed that he made the point that over 100 million have been thrust back into poverty because of this financial scandal that has its nexus in the City of London. And we decided, and Paul agreed, this is nothing less than a financial holocaust. Millions are dying. Millions are set to die. People are committing suicide, all for the sake of some banker bonuses to protect what David Cameron considers to be the jewel of the UK economy. Fraud, larceny, manipulation, market rigging, scandals, and not to mention his re-election coffers that put him in office. This goes all the way up to the Bank of England, caught in the LIBOR rigging scandal, is now caught in a collusion with the Treasury in trying to hide a $48 billion black hole of debt that's part of a $37 billion stolen from Osborne, from pensioners and insurers, as part of this coupon stealing, a smash and grab that you've been reading about, where Osborne just stole $37 billion from Treasury, claiming, oh, it's nothing. It's just an accounting error. It's just an accounting gimmick. You know, we're going to use that to pay for what we wanted to pay for. Even though that money is due eventually, it's not unlike any other type of market manipulation where cash is taken in the present and the liabilities are left for a future day. And who pays for the liabilities in the future day? Well, look what's happening in Greece. Look what's happening in all over Europe. Look what's happening all over the world. The austerity that's being imposed to bail out scamsters like Osborne and his scams. You know, I was recently on a news program at the BBC, Daily Politics, and everyone agreed that, yes, the country is remarkably financially illiterate. So I put it to Andrew Neil. I said, well, if everyone agrees that the country is financially illiterate, why is George Osborne pushing a program to exchange workers' rights for shares in those companies? Isn't that exploitive? You just said the country doesn't know anything about stocks and shares, economics and finance. So you're going to have them give up their rights as workers in exchange for something that you admittedly say they have no knowledge about whatsoever? That's outrageous. And I haven't been back on that show. Now getting back to Germany and this fight that's going on between Germany and Britain, because of course one is they're vying for domination in the financial sphere, but of course Germany is over in the Eurozone, and the Eurozone has many problems. The peripheral countries are collapsing, as we all are aware of. And there's, of course, a daily strife in terms of whether or not these countries are going to be able to sustain themselves. But then again, the UK is the most indebted of the G20 nations. If you add the public-private debt to the bank debt, the UK has 700% of its GDP in debt. Iceland, before Iceland collapsed, was just under 1,000%. So this country is in remarkably indebted bad shape. The bank stocks, the banking sector, is still 500% debt to GDP, on top of the public debt, on top of the private debt. The employment, mostly part-time and temporary. The government comes out and says, well, the employment numbers are not that bad. Well, it's all part-time and temporary employment. People who are underemployed, the employment picture is not healthy at all. And ultimately, as I've expressed many times, this is a battle in this country and other countries between savers versus speculators. The savers, the people who put money in pensions, the insurance industry, with interest rates near 0%, one of the biggest losers is the insurance industry that can no longer viably sustain itself as an enterprise or a model that relies on interest rates to be 4 or 5%, a normalized interest rate environment, to affect their model of paying out claims versus money that they have in the bank earning a static rate of return. But because the Bank of England and other banks are forcing that rate down to zero, the insurance industry is now under threat. So how can you have capitalism without insurance? How can you have capitalism without capital? How can you have capitalism without savings? You can't have capitalism without capital. You can't have capital without savings. You can't have savings without a high interest rate to attract savings. So you don't have capitalism here. You don't have capitalism in the United States. You don't have capital in the G20 countries. It's not capitalism. It's a kleptocracy. Not for nothing that people wear those masks around the world, the hero of that film, because people are ready for this global insurrection against banker occupation. And we see it all over the world. But this has many threads to the story, and I want to focus on one that I find particularly interesting. Talking about Germany and England, because we have just heard in the last 2 weeks a remarkable blockbuster story came out in the news. It did not get a lot of attention, but I think that it deserved. October 22nd was a bombshell of news, and I'm going to get there by taking you through a bit of history. And it all started back in the 1999 to 2002 period. So for market historians out there, does that ring a bell? Okay, Gordon Brown was the chancellor. And we have a period very famous around the world, known as Brown's Bottom. Brown's Bottom, 1999 to 2002. Gordon Brown sold 60% of Britain's gold, nearly 400 tons, at a 20-year low price between $256 and $296 an ounce, leaving, no, that's about a 10 billion pound difference between where the price is now. And he didn't just sell the gold. He panic sold the gold, or to use the parlance of the day, he bottled it. Gold was sold at 10% below that day's fix in the London fix. They telegraphed these sales and did them over 17 distinct auctions, which is something you never want to do, to telegraph your motives to the market. So traders around the world front-run those trades. They got in front of those trades. They sold gold ahead of Gordon Brown, and they made tons of money basically making Gordon Brown a dupe and selling at that two-decade low price. And it was shambolic. And the press at the time, to give you an idea of what people were saying about this at the time, it's no secret that this was one of the worst tragedies in Britain's financial history. Quote, the timing of the decision was ludicrous. We told them we're going to push the gold price down before you sell, said Peter Fava, the head of precious metals at HSBC, who was present at these meetings. We thought it was a disastrous decision. We couldn't understand it. We brought up a lot of potential problems at the meeting. Alan Greenspan of the U.S. Federal Reserve and the world's most respected bank governor at that time said in response to Brown's decision, gold still represents the ultimate form of payment in the world. David Cameron says he wants to put this economy on a war footing. What about this crime, selling 60% of the nation's gold at rock-bottom prices? But was it just stupidity? Was it just an act of...
No, it wasn't stupidity. Tomorrow, with Gerald Salonte, we're going to share with you his last 10 minutes that shows how this was a conspiracy and who was behind it. What role did the Federal Reserve, what role did Goldman Sachs, what role did our Wall Street bankers play in this? You have never heard this story before. This will be an exclusive insight from a panel of George Galloway, who you haven't heard yet, and Max Kaiser. And that is why gold was down. That's why Germany, for example, as of today, doesn't have the gold that it was supposed to get. Where did its gold go? Where's all these banks' gold? They don't have the gold. They do not have your gold. What happened to it? This is an interesting story. This will be discussed tomorrow in part two. We're out of time now. I want to thank you all for sharing your insights with us and your time. And we'll have opportunity tomorrow to go to our talkback segment with Gerald Salonte to wrap up this year's programming and give you a look at the world that we're facing in the next 12 months. I'm Gary Knoll. Have a nice day.